Welcome to the Real Triathlon Podcast. I'm your host, Garrick Lowen, here with Nicholas Chase and Jackson Lund.
And we're back with these three fine women of RTS. Thank you so much for joining us. I don't know what we're going to really dive into. The runway's open for you to take off into the stratosphere of comments and crazy stuff that I know you all are doing right now in life. I can't even imagine. Tamara's about to go do the T1000 or 1 million. I don't know what it is. It T1?
T100.
T100.
Or I have one person I keep communicating with, though, who keeps calling it the P100, which is a little funny.
I like that better.
We've got Lisa doing a gravel race this weekend, BWR something or other.
Yeah, I'm doing the BWR. It's called the Wana. So there's the Wana, the wafer, and the waffle. And the Wana is like 32 or 33 miles. So it's like for beginners. And I don't have a gravel bike, so I'm doing it on my mountain bike. So I'm going to get my rear end kicked by 80-year-olds on their gravel bikes. But
you
I'm all about
fine.
They're all the faster people are probably going to be in like the bigger races, but there's a lot of like single track stuff. When we pre-rode one of Paige, I'm staying with my friend Allison, and Pedro Gomes is one of her roommates. And so we pre-rode the wafer course, the 78 mile one. And there's a lot of like super kind of sandy single track stuff in there. And I was like, thank God I have my mountain bike. I would be totally sketched out to do this on my gravel bike.
Yeah. BWR does that to you. They put you on some single track late in the race, and typically you're neck and back or broken by the time that happens. And it's just not fun. So a hardtail is a great way to do it.
Yeah. Or a full suspension.
Or full softtail. And Nicole, you're just here for support and for anecdotes, anything, what else?
Opinions, wild speculation about the racing next weekend and this weekend.
Oh, I love speculating about races and things in general. So we can do that. We place money on bets like they do for the Super Bowl, but for the T100.
I literally just had to do a course with Triathlon Canada about how I'm not supposed to bet on anything to do with my own sport.
No, you're not betting. We don't have any courses like that. We get to just fly under the radar.
Okay, excellent. I have no official connections with any bets that Lisa or Nicole may or may not be placing.
Not involved, don't know about them.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, you are close to Vegas. You can go run our bets over.
Connor from on your left has always been like, they have no idea what they're betting against when it comes to the world championship, because they normally do have bets for that type of stuff. And he's like, they had nib at some crazy odds that didn't make any sense. So triathlon gambling could be something in the future. I mean, it could get us new fans, that's for sure.
Maybe that's where the PTO will actually get some income from. Because I don't know where they're getting come from now.
I think I did some rough math, and I think this year they may be spending around $34 million.
Oh, wow.
I don't know where that's coming back from. Somewhere.
Someone won the Mega Millions.
Cost to hold races? And
salary, they've put out a lot of money for athletes to just guarantee showing up. But I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. It is the one thing that T100's done is bring more of a spectacle to this whole sport that we all love and live. And it's also shown Ironman that there's somebody else out there who wants to do something too. And Ironman, I think, has done a lot of work to get our sport to where it is. And maybe they got a little tired. Maybe they got tired of us. But now that I think they're like, oh, hey, bros, come on back over here a little bit.
Well, yeah, because did you guys get the email today about the Ironman? Is they want like our little bios and everything, kind of like how the PTO has. So they're going to have like, they're going to enhance their broadcast for the Ironman Pro Series, which will be pretty sweet.
Yeah, and they're setting up like a website highlighting athletes as well, or something like that.
Yeah. Which I think is awesome. I hope they do their own ranking too. Because my opinion,
It'll be really interesting if they do. It'll be funny to see like all of the possible differences between different race organizers' ranking systems.
Right? Because all the Ironman races in the Ironman ranking would be like ranked way higher, and all the PTO races are going to be ranked higher. So, but my thing is that like neither the PTO nor Ironman, we need like an outside organization that hosts world rankings, in my opinion, because
Thorsten was doing.
He was, but that now he's paid by the PTO 100%.
Yeah, he got hired on.
Yeah,
it's so tricky because like the PTO started out more as that outside organization, and it's just not quite what they are anymore.
No, they're athletes.
And they've had three products since they started, different names and race types. It's interesting to see it evolve, like between the Collins Cup and them having the Clash stuff with Daytona, and then I don't know, they've just really been a lot of places. And the biggest problem, I don't know if you all agree with me on this, is this: everybody within the sport of triathlon is just very disconnected in terms of having a common goal of growing one type of voice within the sport. It seems like there's five or four different narratives that are kind of split off. There's not a lot of synergy amongst triathlon. And I hope one day we can all change that.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like there are different styles of triathlon. Like, it seems healthy to have a mix of different sort of possible routes to go in the sport. So I don't know what would like a unified one thing look like?
For one, the PTO not undercutting a Super League organization with some funneled money to make sure that their services, I think if these Ironman Challenge, Clash even, PTO or T100, I think if those entities could develop programs from the ground up that were relatively, I mean, everyone's going to have their own flair. I don't think it should be a monopoly, or there should be individuality and competition, but I still think they should try to support each other and not just put one race on somebody else's weekend to pull athletes from that. And is mass participation, you know, I feel like the problem is everybody's cannibalizing the same athletes. Everyone's
so you'd like to see more, like just less of this narrative of sort of like Ironman versus PTO, that however either organization is behaving, like that's sort of become the way that people see it, to have more like of a cooperative.
Yeah.
At more least cooperation.
Between their
schedules, between the way that they streamline opportunities, if they're hosting similar types of races, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem and the reason why our sport isn't going to the heights that it could is because you've got no reliability. You've got nobody sitting on the couch and dialing up a race every weekend, knowing it's going to be there Saturday or Sunday at 8 a.m. Nobody can go to one place look at Red Bull TV. I can go to Red Bull TV and see all the stuff Red Bull is doing. If we had like a triathlon TV network where every Saturday I could watch two or three races, I could watch Nextera, I could watch a Earn Endurance network. Like, that's what I think all these companies should be funneling some money into, is creating a place where fans of the sport who aren't either there or know somebody's there or aren't participating themselves can actually be fans and love it and want to watch it and want the drama. I would love to see that as a connecting tie between all of these organizations, is one place to watch at high-end broadcast level too.
Did you see that they're putting, that's going to be on Max, the T100?
That's great.
As an HBO Max. I mean, I think that's why they want to do the season-long narrative and have 8 races, so that there is that consistency. But I do see a shift this year. I mean, you're always going to cannibalize athletes by having additional events. Like, even if you have it on all the weekends, there isn't a race, you have like a different race. Like, that's still, you still have, as an athlete, have to choose. You can't have unlimited racing throughout the year.
Particularly in an endurance sport where like you can't go out and race multiple times a week or tons of weekends in a row and things like that.
Yeah. But this year, the fact that, It is a little concerning that this year now you're actually blocking out some athletes from competing, in the sense of taking over Clash Miami and now in Alcatraz. So that's like a bit of a shift that I find concerning. Up until now, I've been very much in favor of adding more events, pumping money into the sport for the top level athletes. I don't know, Lisa, I feel like you had a strong opinion about the
athletes. I have a lot of strong opinions. that some people just think that, here's the issue that I have is every time I say something about like the P, like the now I want to call it the P100. About, and I still just want to call it the PTO tour, but out of the T100 is that everyone thinks that like, oh, just these lower ranked athletes are so annoyed that they can't get in. Well, it's like, okay, well, part of it is like me personally, like I wasn't in, I'm in zero place to race a T100 race right now, or maybe at the end of the year, maybe I have a great year, who knows. But my issue is that there's no streamlined process to get athletes into it. I listened to the like Paul on Eric's podcast a couple weeks ago and something, and they were like, well, how does a lower ranked athlete who's up and coming get into the PTO tour? Because for next year, the top 10 ranked athletes from the T100 are guaranteed a place in the tour next year. So if like, how do you get into it? It's like, you have to like beg the PTO, get on your hands and knees and like bow down and, you know, like be an Instagram influencer or something to like gain enough traction to get a wild card. Then you have to nail the one race, the one opportunity you have as a wild card, get a shit ton of points from the PTO because all these other races don't have enough points to actually like creep up into, you know, the PTO rankings. So I just think there's such a stiff standard to actually for entry into it. And I hope the PTO realizes that and does something about it. Because I mean, there's going to be people who, are going to eventually retire or not want to race anymore. But if you're guaranteed like six figure salary every year, like why would you want to retire? Like you can just like carry on as long as you can. I don't know.
Well, I think that's part of them trying to develop personalities that are around for a couple of years, at least, so people can follow and be fans. Like, you know, Tom Brady was one of those guys that no matter who you were, you loved him and knew him because of his success. And maybe they're trying to hope for, or even like a tennis center, since that was some of their, you know, we're trying to be like that type of organization. So
I think I know in the materials, at least that they've sent us, there is information about like how this is supposed to affect the rankings and how you would get into it. But I haven't pored over that. I feel like it wasn't on its face of it, like super straightforward to me, but I also just feel like going into competing in this series, just partly like what works for me psychologically for my racing, I was like, I just don't want to think about this right now, and I want to focus on like my season. So I unfortunately don't have like an informed I can't really explain what the process would be, but I do think it is a problem that it's not extremely transparent to people. And I also think that like it's great to want to expand the media story of the sport or try to get more viewers, but I think it's actually more important than that at the end of the day, that there continues to be like upward mobility within the sport, or like a fair chance for people entering into it. And as much as you're trying to prioritize engagement of a larger audience, I think that should be a secondary goal to maintaining a fairness of opportunity within the sport as much as possible.
Yeah. Like, I literally think about like two guys on our team, like Jackson and Mark, both I think could compete in the T100 series and probably finish in the top 10, like in the series. And I think those are two guys that are going to just be like begging for wild cards and the opportunity to race in one of these races and have to like prove themselves. And say their one opportunity, they have a shit race, but like they are not asked back for a wild card. It's like kind of like this make or break opportunity, unless you're like a contracted athlete. I don't know. So that's kind of an issue, but I do hope that the PTO realizes this and addresses it in the future. Like what I would love to see is maybe even at like the grand final, whatever that they're calling it for the PTO tour, is that they have an open race alongside with it. So any pros that want to go in that race, and they guarantee the top three athletes on both sides, you're contracted athlete for next year. Like, give it a fair opportunity, let people know like months and months in advance. So they have an opportunity to prepare and say like, hey, this is what I'm going to target instead of like the 70.3 world championships, or like, that's going to be a big goal because this is the race series I want to race in next year. But like, give there has to be some sort of like way to get in, not just like, oh, I hope I can get a wild card, or like, let me go race 8 Ironman 70.3s this year and win every single one, which is also really freaking hard to do. So
yeah, and
what I'm guessing is the bottom line is there's lack of transparency, lack of communication. It's more of a popularity contest, it seems like, based off of what is validated by this organization's, you know, validity of this person versus this person. And it just seems like that's the hardest part, because there's no, and also like, we're what, 10 or 15 days out from the race, and I don't think all the wild cards have even been announced. Like,
they haven't. I've seen a start list, but it's still confidential. So the athletes competing know who they are, but they haven't announced it yet. Okay, so
at least they told who's going to be there. Because
we know Jackie Herring and Haley Chura are going to be the women's side.
Yep. They let them know.
Go ahead, Tamara.
I've lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Oh, just, yeah, I think they are still figuring a lot out as they go, and you can see that year to year where like the approach has shifted each year, but they do need to get to a point ideally where the entry standards are transparent and people can easily understand them. Like, it shouldn't be that athletes are sitting around wondering how this works. It should be easy to explain to someone coming into the sport or someone like rising through the pro field how you would get into this tour if it continues.
Well, it's like Formula One. Like, there's only so many seats in Formula One, and there's 30 drivers who want those seats. Some people are just going to get left out. And I think that's also part of the reality of this sport is just, no matter what, you could be awesome, but we love you. You just aren't going to race for this organization right now.
I think Lisa's concern, though, it sounds like, is that it's, you know, it's one thing to get left out for a year, but it's another thing if you miss one, you know, the 1 year opportunity, and then you're shut out in perpetuity. Like, there needs to be a renewal of the chances to get into what this is, or like a changing over of who is involved based on merit of athletes and the way that they're developing and the way that their season goes year to year. You know, like, and that's how something like the world championship qualifications work as well. Things like that.
And
I'd love to see that.
Well, if you don't love it, like it, you can still race challenge for free and be part of their races, which are amazing.
You're not getting six-figure contracts through challenge yet.
Yeah, but I honestly don't think that, like, still there's the hierarchy of athlete and the pay scale. It's like what we all would like to see. I think you've just always like got to be ready to take another opportunity until you can get that opportunity. And that's the bottom line. If you want to have a bid at the PTO tour or the T100 tour, then you've literally got to put everything into being the best possible athlete and athlete influencer that you can over the years, because those are both weighted and what we can see by who they pick. I mean, I think Taylor Spivey's on the list, and she's never even done any half distance, and she's there, but she's also got a great story, a great narrative. She's a great person. I think they look at a lot of things. So race other stuff until.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm just saying that just in general. It's like, oh yeah, just it's kind of a blanket statement. Like, yeah, go. Like, well, yeah, you can't get into this one. Like, well, yeah, of course we have to only race these other opportunities. It's just different when you're competing for like pennies compared to like, it makes a big difference in lifestyle and what you're able to do, I think.
I will say, in terms of like being an athlete who does have one of these contracts, it's not like a huge change in lifestyle for me. It's like, finally like my lifestyle is basically sustainable that I can stay in the sport. Like it's not, I think maybe, and Lisa, not, I'm not at all directing this at you as your impression, but like anyone who does look at it and have an impression of like, oh, now every athlete involved in the tour is just like raking in the money. Like for me, it's like, oh, maybe it's like more realistic that Chris and I can save for a house in the crazy housing market. Like it's really, I'm very year to year, you know, like many athletes are, and looking at like, can I make this sustainable and keep doing this for another year? Like, it's a huge luxury for me that I'm able to do it full time right now instead of balancing it with another job. And that's like a question that comes up for renewal each year. So to me, it's like such a relief to have, this is the first year between that and some other developments with sponsors. Like it's truly the first year that I have any kind of salary that's not just based on either like prize money and bonuses and completely uncertain until you see how the season unfolds. So I wish that there was like more that was broader in the sport. Like it just is a huge psychological difference to have some financial security for the year.
And that's, I think, the big difference is sustainable. Like you're like, the word you said is like, this, I'm sustainable. It's not like you're getting rich, but it's like, I'm making a living, where I think it's just like, you can, unless you have great bonuses, set up with bonus structures, like I think, or you win a world championships, like I think, or you have just great sponsors. I think it's really hard. If you have no sponsorships, you can't really make a living off of prize money.
Yeah, no, and even with the like the bonuses, like it's so nerve wracking sometimes to be like, okay, like if racing continues to go well this year, or like I'll be okay. But if it's not, like my partner and I are going to have a discussion about our finances, or like I can't tell my partner how much I might be able to help save towards expenses that we're trying to cover together until December, because I just don't know.
Right, right. But I think that's the sustainability thing like, it would be awesome to have more of that across triathlon, but obviously the sport doesn't make enough money for that to happen right now, but
it is nice, like in triathlon relative to some other sports, like that it can, even without sort of a huge media following, there is a pro field that does kind of get by because there are more sponsorship opportunities than in some other sports that are where there isn't like as much equipment or as much incentive for different companies to get involved. And there it's sort of like, if your national sports body isn't paying you on some Olympic track, then it isn't sustainable to be in the sport, to make a living from it.
Every semi-pro runner in Boulder that runs like sub 4 minute miles or whatever, like, you know, 420 miles as a female. And it's like, they're like, well, I work full-time at the running store too.
Yeah.
Running is a great example of that.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm super interested to see how, like, having like that lower stress level of like just making ends meet and having that more predictable salary almost elevates those who are, I don't know, bottom half of like the non Lucy Charles and non Daniela's who have those big guaranteed salaries coming in just from sponsors, and how that almost equalizes the whole pool of 20 athletes. Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. And actually, one thing, looking at it with their contracts, like I kind of had in my mind a number where if there was like a certain amount of disparity between what the top people were getting and what the bottom people are getting, and I'm kind of more in like the bottom half of it, then I wasn't going to participate. And they did come up with enough that I feel like I can be financially comfortable for the year being at the bottom half. And I was like, okay, that feels fair to me within that pool, and I'm happy with it. So but I definitely did have a number in my mind where I felt like it wouldn't be worth it, or it wouldn't feel fair enough across the field that I would feel comfortable participating.
I think looking forward, it's going to be incredibly interesting. Because Tamara, is it only a year contract?
Yeah.
I will be very interested to see the renewal percentage of current versus, you know, how the recirculation looks. I think that's going to be very telling. This year, of course, is underway. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun to watch and pay attention. But I think seeing how this all evolves in the master plan, and the athletes who did well but aren't coming back versus the ones who have certain other values that are coming back. That's what I think will be very telling about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think there's so much, like, it will be interesting for everyone to see how it unfolds. Like, I think parts of it are still kind of coming together, and I don't think even the tour itself quite knows how it'll play out. So each race might be a little bit different in the setup. I don't know. It'll be, I'm curious. And I think Miami will be like a big, like, information gathering experience on what is this maybe going to look like.
Which two races did you decide not to participate in?
I've decided for sure I'm not doing Singapore. I would love to go to Singapore, and I think the course there looks cool, but it just financially makes way more sense to go to Oceanside. Like, I think that's a great race in North America. I want to defend my title, and some Argonne 18 is going to have a presence there. And just with Worlds in New Zealand, it felt like very extravagant to fly to Singapore at a different time of the year as well. So that's the only one for sure. I might not go to one of the Middle Eastern, like the first Middle Eastern one. So Dubai is sort of a question mark. I haven't 100% decided that I wouldn't do it, but it would be a lot of time away from home before 70.3 Worlds to go.
Cool. That makes sense. I mean, I think that'll be interesting to see who decides to go to Singapore versus who, you know, throughout the rest of the race series too, who pulls out and doesn't, you know, race, and maybe the fields have different wild card opportunities in those positions.
I want to know if you guys think that having 20 people on a start line is going to make it exciting enough, or if you think that's like, because in my opinion, I really do feel like having a like 30 people, like for PTO, the US Open this year, was it, I think they had like 35 to 40 people on the start lines, and was a great size. I'm curious as to your guys, like, we'll obviously see in like a week and a half if you think that's exciting or not.
I think it'll be really interesting what they end up doing with the broadcast, because I feel like for watching a broadcast, it often ends up being like 3 or 5 people anyway who are just highlighted the whole time. But for the in-person viewing experience, like, I agree, Milwaukee had such and like excellent. I loved watching the race, like the men's race there. Like, the atmosphere was so good. And it did make it more exciting as a spectator to just have more athletes in the field going by all the time and more different things to pay attention to. But I feel like the way that triathlon broadcasts work right now, it's like it wouldn't make a difference, or like you wouldn't even know.
Yeah, you'd be like, I thought there were only 5 people racing anyway.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to the level of difficulty of the course, the amount of loops, you know, the touch points and passing points of the course. I think the dynamic of the course can really make it quite exhilarating. I think Miami's course, having raced it a few times myself, it's so fun. You can carry so much speed if you've got a nice tailwind on that kind of finish line stretch, and you bank the first few hard corners, and it really suits somebody who is willing to attack a corner and knows their bike and body bike connection really well. So I think that's why Miami's a great place to open for sure, especially speedways in general. I think the whole atmosphere of Daytona and Miami, even all of the opportunities that Clash can provide for speedways, they're just purpose built for awesome. I mean, that's why we're doing the WTCS race in Dubai, I think, or I don't know if it's Dubai or Abu Dhabi this weekend or something, but that's also on a Formula One track. So super cool.
I think, well, Tamara, what's the weather going to, well, actually, no, you're Canadian. You're going to say something in Celsius. I don't know what it means.
I haven't been looking. I sort of know both. I know Celsius precisely. And I have like broad categories of relevant seeming temperatures in Fahrenheit that I can guess at.
I can tell you the temperature.
I want to say, what is it in the 60s at night there, Nick? Is that right?
Does well,
that
the highs sense? And lows are 66, and the high is 84, the low is 66.
Okay. So there. Where I think, yeah, originally I saw something that said 6, but now I think it's just before 4.
That's a start. Great time.
Yeah, like originally I think I saw something that was like 6 p.m. and I was like, well, that's going to be different.
It's but dark.
but yeah, no, I think it's like, I think, yeah, I think just before 4 now is when we start.
It just, the Miami Clash Miami 2022. Nick, you were there and I was there and I raced it. And it was 40% of the women's field DNF'd because it was like 1,000 degrees.
Oh.
People like dropping out, like Chelsea Sodaro, who went on to win the Ironman World Championships, like she didn't finish that race. Like Emma Pallant Brown passed out on the course. Like yeah. It was like,
it's funny. There was a T100 video on Instagram today, and it was showing so much of that footage. It kind of
yeah. And Sarah Pallas Sala crashing at like, maybe it was Daytona. Like, there's so much drama at these races, but it's so fun. Like the laps are great.
I just remembered that the heat that year was like next level. So hopefully that 4 p.m. start and maybe not as hot.
Yeah. Yeah. It was looking like the heat shouldn't be too bad. The humidity is a little bit high, but maybe also a bit less later in the day.
The best part about that speedway too, is as the sun goes down, the big wall, like the broadcast wall, or like the maybe where it's just higher than the stadium, that does tend to block some of the sun for the front stretch of that race. Like the men's race was always second to the women in Miami. Mm-hmm. So we would get a little bit more shade. It was nice. And I think Tamara, 4 p.m. would be great. Sorry.
I was just saying, Tamara, I have a question for you. Because my gut feeling is that the PTO is going to try to have like create these rivalries in the PTO tour. Mm. Like, oh, these are these. So if you were to guess somebody who is going to be your rival for the series, who do you think it would be or is going to be?
I think it'll depend how my racing goes. I think if I can like get myself into a position where I can actually like compete with some of the other top runners, that would be a great one. But I have to actually like get myself high enough in the field to be there, which I just haven't been yet. So I don't know. But I don't really like intense rivalries. So
but I feel like I also agree with Lisa. I think they're going to try to like fabricate rivalries, you know?
Yeah.
Based on even just numbers.
I thought it was so interesting. You know, the whole like Ellie Holly thing? I thought it was so interesting they both managed to just like completely like reject that one. Like it was such a big thing for a little bit. And then they both was like, no, that's not a thing. And I haven't seen anything about it since, basically.
No, I think Wisconsin, when the PTO race was there, like, or the US Open. I think that was the last time you saw anything Ellie and Holly. But even then, they're like, well, we get on fine. Like, I don't know what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, no, it was funny how they rejected it. They successfully rejected it. Like, the media about it stopped.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference between the men and the women, in that there's more men who like are like, yeah, I really want to beat this guy. And I know like Sky Munch has talked about this too, and it's like, well, like why can't we just be friends with everyone and like just, you know, want to like rip each other's legs off in the race, but not have to like have this like rivalry, like the Sam Laidlaw thing, the Collins Cup a couple years back. I feel like they make so much drama, but I feel like way less drama.
Yeah, I can see that it entertains people, but I like the athletes that I always respect the most are athletes who do a really good job of like, if they're racing, it is intense and you are just fighting each other and you're not friends. But then as soon as you're not racing, it's like agreed upon that you're not racing and it's a different relationship than when you're racing. Like, to me, keeping those two things separate is really important just for like my sense of well-being. And I like having a specific outlet for the part of me that feels extremely competitive, and then I don't want to live the rest of my life that way.
It feels like men do a good job at that. Women feels like they're very cold and kind of avoidance, like purposeful avoidance and maybe some cattiness here and there. But guys, I feel like, are just like, before any race up, there's just usually all of us are like, oh yeah, man, that's great. Oh, remember that? Yeah, it's like a little bit of a laughter, nervousness, but we all do talk. Even like on the start line, before we're all about to go murder each other, everyone's like, all right, guys, see you at the other side. Like, that's like the send off. Like, it's on.
Well, girls do that too. We do that too.
All right, well, that's good.
Jackie Herring and I were laughing at me during, like, in the middle of our race at Indian Wells about how bad my cornering was on some of the 180-degree turns. We, like, both laughed because she kept catching up to me there. I feel like it's a mix. Maybe genders do manage it a little bit differently, but I do feel like the women's pro field is overall friendly, and sometimes it is harder for people like right before a race to interact a lot, but then that dissipates after a race.
Yeah.
Speaking of differences between men and women, I was pretty like when I saw who accepted Pete on the T100 contracts, I thought that there was like way many more of the top women accepted than the top men. And I thought, well, maybe because like the men are more specialized in like there's more men who are specialized in long distance. But then I was like, if you look at the T100 start list, so for, well, I guess we only know the men's start list, but for Clash Miami, you see a lot more of the top women missing, and you see a lot more roll downs or wild cards or whatever, hot shots. Or
so, I think that has a lot to do with the timing of World Championships in Nice. And Kona, men's world championships in Kona, and that being more of kind of like a type of race. And I think a lot of them won't do, is it Vegas, PTO Vegas, T100?
Yeah, I want to get wild for that one.
Right? Yeah.
So like maybe there's more Nick, he's getting lapped again, but we brought him on because he lives nearby. He's no big deal.
We just need, the only contract with he had to stay at his own house and drive in.
He brought half of St. George with him, so perfect.
Yeah. We love having him out there. Look, we get to see him a lot, more and more as the race goes
on. That's great hair.
Great connection.
I was excited by that one when it turned out that it will be in Lake Las Vegas. I was a little worried. I was like, oh God, Vegas, are they going to do something like really gimmicky on the strip or something like that? Oh. They're going to be swimming in fountains. And I love like that Lake Las Vegas area was so beautiful when we were there for our camp. So I was like, okay, nice. That sounds a lot better to me.
How epic would it be to be swimming in like the freaking Bellagio fountain pond, doing laps of that, and like ripping it up and down the strip? Like
I guess it would be an experience.
Yeah,
I pitched a PTO race like that. Or, I mean, Super League race like that. Super League race on the strip would work in the Bellagio. It'd be epic.
Super League is like a better forum for it. I guess it's just I got into the sport very enamored with the like beautiful lakes in the forest, and then you ride through the quiet hills and run around the lake again, kind of like scenery aspect of it. So it's very far removed from that. I want to be in Finland where we're like off through the countryside and there are birch forests and
No, you go.
Go ahead, Nicole.
So I was going to ask Lisa and Nick to give Tamara any advice about, because you guys have done the course before. So whether it's about.
Yeah, I hear that it's more technical than you expect.
It is.
I would say that. Yeah, the first year I did it, I did not take all the turns in aero, but I think it was a little bit windier. But the second year I did it, I took every turn in aero, which I was super proud of myself for. But I think it is like kind of Nick said, like people who are willing to like attack those curves and turns, so you're going to have, a lot more, like a little bit of a leg up on just like not having to like accelerate as much out of turn, so you're going to save a couple of matches there. I don't know, the swim it's two loops. Is it two loops? We've always done two loops, I think.
2.25
Aussie exit.
Probably is. I need to look at that. I got all of the like slides today with information. I've only partly looked at them and I haven't looked at the course maps in detail yet.
Yeah. I love looped bike courses though, for some, like in that closed set, like it's kind of like reminds me of crit racing. And you're just like, all right, one down, one down, one down. But a lot, Tamara, that kind of sounds like the opposite of your riding through the hill.
It is. And I've had mixed experiences with it. Like I have had some, like during the pandemic, we did like a Canadian pro championship that PTO helped fund a prize purse for. And it was on it was Olympic distance, so it was like 40k, but it was on like a 2k loop through a half constructed subdivision, and I thought, I forget how many, yeah, it was a lot of laps. I just remember thinking like, this is going to be terrible, this like laps of like 2 kilometers squares, and I actually had a lot of fun. It was like a great atmosphere, and it was just a different experience. So I've definitely had some that I've enjoyed, but it's not what I gravitate to, so it's a little hit or miss.
Yeah. Nick, what's your advice?
The swim is a typical swim. It's awesome. The water is super clean. It's like spring fed in that little swimming area. I actually love swimming there. So that's sublime. Getting out of there to the track was a little bit dicey. So just really focus on being precise with your cornering, and then get your feet in right when you get onto the track into your shoes. And then I really would say, if there's any tailwind on that back straight on the main straightaway where the pit lane is, if there's a tailwind there, you've got to send it through that first corner, bank a wide entry into those S's, dive really nicely into it. Like, you can still stay aero and just kind of lean and kind of keep you lean down and you keep your bike a little bit more vertical rather than kind of like a MotoGP rider. You lean on top of the bike and you keep the bike slanted a little bit. So you just want to keep your center of balance right there over the aero bars. And I tell you what, if you can hit those S's well and power out, it is so fast. You'll always just be gaining and gaining on some of the more hesitant riders. So when you pre-ride, specifically work on those, the main corner off the front stretch and those S's. And those are going to really be good. The only one I ever had to come out of aero on was the last corner before you hit the back straight, or the back loop of the actual, because then they put you on the like the loop of the race course and you're like on the flat part of it. That's the only time you go real wide and then you cut in sharp and you can carry your speed there. I would even catch like Hansen so bad there every time. His cornering was just was not good. So yeah, if you can really work on your transition of speed into cornering and setting your speed ahead of time and just committing with a good body lean, you're going to be great. And this running course suits you very well. It's just, you can see everything in front of you. You can just set targets and everybody's back and just really send it. So I think as long as you can send those corners well and maintain speed, you're going to be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Cornering isn't my forte. I've been trying to work on it, but it'll
practice every day.
Be interesting to see where it's at once I'm there. And it's hit or miss here right now for outdoor riding. So it's been, I've been working on it, but not as consistently as I hopefully will once it's better weather out.
Well, and when you get to, well, you guys, you're going to have so much time to like pre-ride the track that it just takes like a couple times doing it. And you're like, oh, okay. Is that, mm-hmm. Yeah. But how cool would it be if they made all the athletes actually get up on the bank, like just like a little like out and back on like the 45 degrees, like.
I think they should do it on the run. That'd be epic. Like, you've got to do like a hill climb and then come back down.
Go touch the top of the track and then like.
It can be called the ankle breaker. I even told Bill, I was like, dude, put a bell up there, and anybody who can has the audacity to run up there and ring that bell during their lap gets like 30 seconds off bell. They get like a bonus. Like, you can get like Mario Kart style.
Yeah. I always, you really could make triathlon really interesting if we started adding in like rules.
Put like Zwift like power ups into the
race. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You get like, or like tagged.
So there's a concept that we've been kicking around, me, Mark, and Seth, and I think we're going to do it. It's just a matter of when it actually makes sense. But every athlete who wants to do this will be given like a budget. And you have to buy all of the things you plan to compete with at like Walmart, like a bike, all your swim gear, your nutrition. Like, you got to go, maybe you'll get $1,000 and you got to just go to Walmart, and that's what you can race with. And we're going to have this course to where it's like transition. You'll get like those big foam Hulk gloves, and you can just like, you can roughly fight each other in transition if you wanted to slow somebody down. It'll just be like a ridiculous triathlon with like many anecdotes that are going to be hilarious, but allow the race to actually happen. But I think we're going to do that for sure.
That would be pretty epic. I think we should do like triathlon meets like Spartan races. You know how like you have to like in the middle of your race, you have to like hit a spear or like you have to like make a free throw or something. Like how hilarious.
He's like, Xterra is not exciting enough for you, Lisa. You needed to be more off-road.
Or there's like a paintball zone and you get shot.
I'm just trying to figure out like ways that I might be able to leg up on some of you like crazy fast people. Like maybe I can, I'm not so bad at shooting free throws.
Lisa. Oh gosh. Okay. If free throws are involved, I better find another sport. I'm not going to succeed there.
Just thinking of things we're good at and trying to integrate them into triathlon. Like, what if we could like bake cookies in the middle of the race? Like,
yeah. Or write your name in cursive.
Or like write some Excel formulas. Like,
I don't know. Baking cookies seems like it's adding a lot of subjectivity, though. Like, is it then like a judging component of?
Of turns into like a like gymnastics or diving, whatever. You have to get like points for like your finish or however style points.
Well, I think at this point we've probably hit the end of a productive discussion. I don't know, just me.
But I do have one more question for you guys, and. And this is for all of you, if you could only race one person, like that's actively competing right now, that's like, it's just you and them like all the time for the whole season. It's like, you like kind of, I guess kind of like your rival, who would it be?
Like someone I could beat.
I was going to say, so I really didn't, I mean, I both liked and disliked the way that Ann Hogg just crushed me coming out of T2 at Collins Cup, and I would really like to just have endless rematches until I can win that one. So I don't know how long it would take, but maybe one day I would, and it would feel very satisfying, so I could do that for a year.
That's fair.
Nick, who would yours be?
That's really tough, because most of the guys I like am friends with, so it's like, who do I want to, I don't know. I mean, I'm so slow right now, so it's just hard to even think of someone in that caliber who I could beat. A pass for, come back to me.
Yeah.
Okay, no, Chris Leiferman. That's who I want to race. He's, I love that guy. I've never beaten him. I'd love to beat him.
Yeah, you just keep racing him. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
What about you, Lisa?
I don't know. I asked you this question. I didn't actually have an answer to mine, but I'm just thinking of trying to think of someone who I think racing Leslie is fun because I think we're like decently matched on the swim. Like it could go either way, or we'll swim within like 30 seconds of each other. And then like, I can get ahead on the bike. And then like, she's such a better runner. It's like, does she catch me? How close does she get? When does she pass me on the run? Like, I think that's kind of like a fun battle.
That's but, much better than my answer, where I'm like, I want to just win easy. Like, I really like your guys' interpretation of that question, where you're like, yeah, like imagining having a dual meet, like week, month after month through the whole season. That's it. And like, yeah, you want to compete against someone who can bring out the best of you and is somewhat clean, somewhat evenly matched from the beginning, so that they're not just taking off on you.
Or it's like
for you to have the right amount of glory though, Nicole, we need to find someone for you who is like, you know, you'll beat them, but they're good. So people will still be impressed when you beat them. So it's a tricky like niche there that we have to fill to fulfill your desires for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Good question.
Yeah. Anyways, that was my
random. What if you had to like, pick one thing to eat during every race. Like you had to eat it at the halfway point during like a T100. You're like, all right, no matter what, you got to pick it right now. It's got to be a sandwich. Which type of sandwich would you eat at every race? I would be a turkey sandwich.
Knuckle sandwich.
What kind? Which one?
A knuckle sandwich.
Oh, no, fluffer tier.
Fluffer nutter.
Okay. Fluffer nutter, or like PB&J. I feel like that would sit easily.
Yeah, I was going to say peanut butter and honey.
Okay. Erroneous, but good. Good content. All right, Tamara, of course, we hope you have such a great race, and your prep and your travel logistics and all those things go super easy, low key. And I'm sure the energy there is just going to be so great. We are, I mean, you're one of the first ever to race one of these first ever races. So you're setting a standard, and you know, you'll win. So no big deal.
Yeah, thank you. It'll be interesting. It feels so early. I've never started a season before April, and I thought that was really early last year. So, yeah, just going into it is like information collecting on what this is like, and yeah, interested. We'll see.
Handle those corners, and you will be fine.
It's not a given though. I'll try. At least maybe I'll improve my cornering as I go along.
And tire pressure. Make sure you run a little bit lower tire pressure. The humidity is going to be high there. You're on tubeless, got good wheels. You can afford to run a little bit lower rolling resistance on those courses because of the humidity and heat.
Okay.
And it'll help your handling too.
That's also something I'm bad at. I will try that as well.
Test it on the pre-ride.
The only time I like really lowered my tire pressure, I had a flat, and I always feel a little paranoid now. So it's like gradually been less than the extreme tire pressure that I used to race on, but I still Lisa was giving me a hard time in Cozumel.
70 or lower.
Okay, not 100, not 100, but and not 70 either.
try really? 70 on your pre-ride.
Okay,
I do.
If well, I get another flat, I'm blaming you.
you ride 25s though, right?
I 25 on the back and a 23 on the front.
Oh, so no, that's like you gotta go wider, her girl. Wheels.
With her wheels, it's what's aero optimized, right?
Yeah, that's the advice from Nick at Elevo.
So maybe 75 to 80 is fine.
I would listen to her.
Yeah. No, I trust Nick's advice, but yeah, 80 sounds doable. That sounds reasonable.
On all the right. Envy wheels, sorry, my last on the Envy wheels sponsored tag shout out. Mark Dubrick was like, because I was pumping him up to like 75. He's like, stop pumping him up so high. Ride 68. So now I ride 68.
Well, we just had Envy on previous podcasts, and we talked about a lot of tire pressure rolling resistance. So I'd listen to that. It's some good tips.
I will do that on my drive home from Arizona. So thanks.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's awesome to get some familiar faces, but new voices to the podcast. And of course, come on anytime and bring more fun topics.
Want it.
Okay. All right. Nice to see you all. Have a good night.
Goodbye, everybody.
Peace out.
I got ish to do, flying through the sky in my parachute, dancing on the couch like I'm Tommy Cruise on a one-man mission trying to see it through.